Are you going to keep this thing? Jody asked. She was talking about the Lincoln Navigator. Reacher thought about it as he waited. They were jammed up on the approach to the Triborough. Maybe, he said. It was more or less brand new, very quiet and smooth. Black metallic outside, tan leather inside. 400 miles on the clock, still reeking of new hide and new carpet, and the strong plastic smell of a box-fresh vehicle. Huge seats, each one identical with the driver's chair. Lots of fat consoles with drinks holders and little lids suggestive of secret storage spaces. I think it's gross, she said. He smiled. Compared to what? That tiny little thing you were driving? That was much smaller than this. You're much smaller than me. She was quiet for a beat. It was Rudder's, she said. It's tainted. The traffic moved and then stopped again halfway over the Harlem River. The buildings of Midtown were far away to his left and hazy like a vague promise. It's just a tool, Reacher said. Tools have no memory. I hate him, Jody said. I think more than I've ever hated anybody. He nodded. I know, he said. The whole time we were in there, I was thinking about the Hobies, up there in Brighton, alone in their little house, the look in their eyes. Sending your only boy off to war is a hell of a thing, and to be lied to and cheated afterward, Jody. There's no excuse for that. Swap the chronology, it could have been my folks. And he did it 15 times. And I should have hurt him worse. As long as he doesn't do it again, he said. He shook his head. The list of targets is shrinking. Not too many BNR families left now to fall for it. They made it off the bridge and headed south on 2nd Avenue. It was fast and clear ahead for 60 blocks. And it wasn't him coming after us, she said quietly. He didn't know who we were. Reacher shook his head again. No. How many fake photographs do you have to sell to make it worth trashing a Chevy Suburban? We need to analyze it right from the beginning, Jody. 2 full-time employees get sent to the Keys and up to Garrison, right? 2 full-time salaries, plus weapons and airfare and all, and they're riding around in the Tahoe. Then a 3rd employee shows up with a Suburban he can afford to just dump on the street? That's a lot of money. And it's probably just the visible tip of some kind of an iceberg. It implies something worth maybe millions of dollars. Rudder was never making that kind of money, ripping off old folks for 18,000 bucks a pop. So what the hell is this about? Reacher just shrugged and drove and watched the mirror all the way. Hobie took the call from Hanoi at home. He listened to the Vietnamese woman's short report and hung up without speaking. Then he stood in the center of his living room and tilted his head to one side and narrowed his good eye like he was watching something physical happening in front of him. Like he was watching a baseball soaring out of the diamond, looping upward into the glare of the lights, an outfielder tracking back under it, the fence getting closer, the glove coming up, the ball soaring, the fence looming, the outfielder leaping. Will the ball clear the fence or not? Hobie couldn't tell. He stepped across the living room and out to the terrace. The terrace faced west across the park, from 30 floors up. It was a view he hated because all the trees reminded him of his childhood, but it enhanced the value of his property, which was the name of the game. He wasn't responsible for the way other people's tastes drove the market. He was just there to benefit from them. He turned and looked left to where he could see his office building all the way downtown. The twin towers looked shorter than they should because of the curvature of the earth. He turned back inside and slid the door closed, walked through the apartment and out to the elevator, rode down all the way to the parking garage. His car was not modified in any way to help him with his handicap. It was a late model Cadillac sedan with the ignition and the selector on the right of the steering column. Using the key was awkward because he had to lean across with his left hand and jab it in backward and twist. But after that, he never had much of a problem. He put it in drive by using the hook on the selector and drove out of the garage one-handed, using his left, the hook resting down in his lap. He felt better once he was south of 59th Street. The park disappeared and he was deep in the noisy canyons of Midtown. The traffic comforted him. The Cadillac's air conditioning relieved the itching under his scars. June was the worst time for that. Some particular combination of heat and humidity acted together to drive him crazy, but the Cadillac made it better. He wondered idly whether Stone's Mercedes would be as good. He thought not. He'd never trusted the air on foreign cars, so he would turn it into cash. He knew a guy in Queens who would spring for it, but it was another chore on the list, a lot to do and not much time to do it in. The outfielder was right there under the ball, leaping with the fence at his back. He parked in the underground garage in the slot previously occupied by the Suburban. He reached across and pulled the key and locked the Cadillac, rode upstairs in the express elevator. Tony was at the reception counter.
"Hello," I called again, Obi told him. "It's in the air."
Tony looked away.
"What?"
Obi asked him. "So we should just abandon this Stone thing."
"It'll take them a few days, right?"
"A few days might not be enough," Tony said. "There are complications. The woman says she talked it over with him, and they'll do the deal, but there are complications we don't know about."
"What complications?"
Tony shook his head. "She wouldn't tell me. She wants to tell you direct."
Obi stared at the office door.
"She's kidding, right?" "She damn well better be kidding. I can't afford any kind of complications now. I just pre-sold the sites. 3 separate deals. I gave my word. The machinery is in motion. What complications?"
"She wouldn't tell me," Tony said again. Hobie's face was itching. There was no air conditioning in the garage. The short walk to the elevator had upset his skin. He pressed the hook to his forehead, looking for some relief from the metal, but the hook was warm too.
"What about Mrs. Jacob?" he asked.
"She was home all night," Tony said, "with this Reacher guy. I checked. They were laughing about something this morning. I heard them from the coroner. Then they drove somewhere north on the FDR Drive, maybe going back to Garrison."
"I don't need her in Garrison. I need her right here, and him."
Tony was silent.
"Bring Mrs. Stone to me,"
Obi said. He walked into his office and across to his desk. Tony went the opposite way, towards the bathroom. He came out a moment later, pushing Marilyn in front of him. She looked tired. The silk sheath looked ludicrously out of context, like she was a partygoer caught out by a blizzard and stranded in town the morning after. Obi pointed to the sofa.
"Sit down, Marilyn," he said.
She remained standing. The sofa was too low to sit on in a short dress, and too low to achieve the psychological advantage she was going to need. But to stand in front of his desk was wrong, too supplicant. She walked around to the wall of windows, eased the slats apart and gazed out at the morning. Then she turned and propped herself against the ledge, made him rotate his chair to face her.
"What are these complications?"
he asked. She looked at him and took a deep breath.
"We'll get to that," she said. "First, we get Cheryl to the hospital."
There was silence. No sound at all, except the rumbling and booming of the populated building. Far away to the west, a siren sounded faintly. Maybe all the way over in Jersey City.
"What are these complications?"
he asked again. He used the same exact voice, the same exact intonation, like he was prepared to overlook her mistake.
"The hospital first."
The silence continued. Hobie turned back to Tony.
"Get Stone out of the bathroom," he said.
Stone stumbled out, in his underwear, with Tony's knuckles in his back, all the way to the desk. He hit his shins on the coffee table and gasped in pain.
"What are these complications?"
Obi asked him. He just glanced wildly left and right, like he was too scared and disoriented to speak. Obi waited, then he nodded.
Break his leg, he said.
He turned to look at Marilyn. There was silence. No sound, except Stone's ragged breathing and the faint boom of the building. Hobie stared on at Marilyn. She stared back at him.
Go ahead, she said quietly. Break his damn leg. Why should I care? He's made me penniless. He's ruined my life. Break both his damn legs if you feel like it, but it won't get you what you want any quicker, because there are complications, and the sooner we get to them, the better it is for you. And we won't get to them until Cheryl is in the hospital.
She leaned back on the window ledge, palms down, arms locked from the shoulder. She hoped it made her look relaxed and casual, but she was doing it to keep herself from falling on the floor. The hospital first, she said again. She was concentrating so hard on her voice it sounded like somebody else's. She was pleased with it. It sounded okay. A low, firm voice, steady and quiet in the silent office.
Then we deal, she said. Your choice.
The outfielder was leaping, glove high, and the ball was dropping. The glove was higher than the fence. The trajectory of the ball was too close to call. Hobie tapped his hook on the desk. The sound was loud. Stone was staring at him. Hobie ignored him and glanced up at Tony.
Take the bitch to the hospital, he said sourly.
Chester goes with them, Marilyn said, for verification. He needs to see her go inside to the ER alone. I stay here as surety. Hobie stopped tapping, looked at her and smiled.
Don't you trust me?
No, I don't trust you. We don't do it this way. You'll just take Cheryl out of here and lock her up someplace else.
Hobie was still smiling. Farthest thing from my thoughts. I was going to have Tony shoot her and dump her in the sea.
There was silence again. Marilyn was shaking inside.
You sure you want to do this?
Hobie asked her.
She says one word to the hospital people, she gets you killed. You know that, right?
Marilyn nodded.
She won't say anything to anybody, not knowing you've still got me here.
You better pray she doesn't.
She won't. This isn't about us, it's about her. She needs to get help.
She stared at him, leaning back, feeling faint. She was searching his face for a sign of compassion, some acceptance of his responsibility. He stared back at her. There was no compassion in his face, nothing there at all, except annoyance. She swallowed and took a deep breath.
And she needs a skirt. She can't go out without one. It'll look suspicious.
The hospital will get the police involved. Neither of us wants that, so Tony needs to go out and buy her a new skirt.
Lend her your dress, Hobie said. Take it off and give it to her.
There was a long silence.
It wouldn't fit her, Marilyn said.
That's not the reason, is it?
She made no reply. Silence. Hobie shrugged.
Okay, he said.
She swallowed again.
And shoes.
What?
She needs shoes,
Marilyn said.
She can't go without shoes.
Jesus,
Hobie said.
What the hell next?
Next, we deal. Soon as Chester is back here and tells me he saw her walk in alone and unharmed, then we deal.
Hobie traced the curve of his hook with the fingers of his left hand.
You're a smart woman, he said.
I know I am, Marilyn thought. That's the first of your complications.
Reacher placed the sports bag on the white sofa underneath the Mondrian copy. He unzipped it and turned it over and spilled out the bricks of fifties. $39,300 in cash. He split it in half by tossing the bricks alternately left and right to opposite ends of the sofa. He finished up with two very impressive stacks. Four trips to the bank, Jody said. Under $10,000, the reporting rules don't apply, and we don't want to be answering any questions about where we got this from, right? We'll put it in my account and cut the Hobies a cashier's check for $19,650. Our half will access through my gold card, okay?
Reacher nodded.
We need airfare to St. Louis, Missouri, plus a hotel.
$19,000 in the bank, we can stay in decent places and go business class. It's the only way to fly, she said. She put her arms around his waist and stretched up on tiptoes and kissed him on the mouth. He kissed her back, hard. This is fun, isn't it? She said. For us, maybe, he said. Not for the Hobies.